Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Dit is so aangenaam om jou vanmôre weer welkom te heet by die ABBA-program Krag van die Woord. Ons in hierdie program, soos elke Sondag, is ons besig om werkelijk op een wijze te kyk en te luister na die woord, wat net ons harte kan oopmaak, sodat ons die woord van die Here self hoor. En daarom het ons die Bible Projects, wat ons in die eerste deel van hierdie program, waar ons luister na hoe Tim en John thema's, gedeeltes van die woord bespreek en ook al hulle kennis en met ons deel op een gesels manier. Dan in die tweede deel van die program is ons bezig om deur Matteus te werk om te luister na wat sê die Here hier vir ons. Om eers te gaan kyk na wat gebeur hier in hierdie gedeelte waarmee ons besig is. Vandag is ons besig in Matteus 6 vers 18, Matteus 9 vers 18 tot 26. En dan kyk ons maar hoe die mense in daardie tyd dit gehoor. En dan kom ons by dit wat die Here vir ons hier sê. Hoe wonderlik is dit nie om die woord van die Here te kan hê en te kan weet dat hy in sy goedheid en sy liefde en sy genade het, hy het dit vir ons gegee sodat ons kan vind die lewe in hom, in Jesus Christus ons Here, om die getrouheid en die liefde van die Here te kan ervaar. So dit is belangrijk hoe ons die woord dan lees. Die levende woord van God. Abbo beteer die programman en ek is Marius Skalekamp, wat die berading verskaf ook by Kaapse Kansel. Jy kan inbel na die Kaapse Kansel nommer 021-180-5744 en jy word dan gelei om met 'n berader te kan gesels, berader wat luister na waarmee jy worstel en waar jy is, en dan saam met jou ook kan bid rondom die saak wat jy deel. Jy kan ook na Abbo se webwerf gaan, www.abbo.org.za, en gaan kyk dat die kursusse wat aangebied word daar. Of jy kan Marietjie skakel by 084-501-1102. Ons gaan in hierdie eerste deel nou luister na die Bible Projects potgooi, en die thema wat ons daar volg saam met hulle is die Sabbatsrus. Wat beteken dit? Met alles wat rondom dit vir ons gegee word in die woord. En vandag gaan dit eintlik oor die land, die grond, wat ook rus het. Die Bible Project potgooi sy titel dan Rest for the Land. En enige een van ons wat op die platteland of op plaas groot geword het, grond, weet dat grond, selfs as jy tuin maak in die stad of die dorp, dat grond het rus nodig. Jy kan nie net maar net vat en vat nie. En dit was die opdrag van die Here in die begin ook, om te heers oor sy skepping aan die mens, waarin die mens baie gefaal het, en vandag nog, as my sê het hoor oor die misbruik van die aarde en die agteruitgang ook daarvan. En dan is daar nog selfs stryery daaroor ook. Is dit of is dit nie so nie? Is dit nie 'n bangmaak storie nie? Maar ons weet die mens misbruik die aarde. En daarom is daar so baie gebrokenheid en ellende ook. In aardverwarming, nie net aardverwarming nie, maar ook ander dinge wat gebeur. By die grootste ding waaroor dit hier gaan, gaan dit oor die misbruik van die grond. En dat die grond het rus nodig. Die Here sê aan Israel, hy voel so sterk daaroor, want dis sy skepping, dat as hy aan die grond nie rus gee nie, dan sal hy hulle straf deur hulle in ballingskap weg te stuur. Dit is baie erg, want dit het gebeur. Of sal sekere mense sê van conspiracy theories, sê dat, maar dit is ook 'n wollaar story. Nee, dit is nie. Israel het in ballingskap gegaan. En hierdie was een van die redes wat duidelik uitgespel word in die Here se woord. Waar hulle die sewende jaar en die jubeljaar die grond moes laat rus en dit nie gedoen het nie. Luister na Bible Project se potgooi oor die rus van die grond. Iets wat so baie keer misgekyk word in die Ou Testament, in die Bybel as geheel. Die grond. Gaan kyk in die Nuwe Testament ook in Romeine 8, hoe Paulus skryf dat die grond, dat die aarde sug en verlang na die vernuwing wat die Here bring. En lieve luisteraar, jy en ek ook, wanneer dit swaar gaan en wanneer ons stoei en worstel, dan, of selfs nie eers, ons kan net sien hoe sleg dit gaan in die wêreld, dan sug ons ook. Maar hier in Romeine 8 ook sê Paulus, die grond, die skepping, sug. Kom ons luister na hulle potgooi en dink daaroor na. Wat sê die Here vir ons ook hierdeur? Bly ingeskakel.
Hey, this is John at the Bible Project. We've been in the middle of a conversation on the theme of rest in the Bible. God created the earth in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he stopped working. He entered his creation like a king entering a throne room to rest and rule. And he wants us, his image, to rule with him on this seventh day. The problem is that left to our own devices, we've turned what meant to be rest into toil and violence and jealousy and mistrust.
What we call the natural world in the biblical story is an existence of humans living at odds with our real nature. And we're living at odds with our environment.
But God is on a mission to bring us back to that restful rule with him and to recreate the world. And so to do that, he chooses an ancient family. He makes a covenant with them so that they can find the rest for themselves and for God's creation. If you've been following along with this series, then you've likely been blown away with me about how much this theme of rest is woven into all the stories of Israel's patriarchs, of Moses and the exile, and how God gives Israel their covenant law, which includes 7 festivals, a Sabbath day, and even a Sabbath year, a whole year where you let the land rest. And all of this is meant to help them begin to live like the future rest has actually come. Today on this episode, we're going to look again at how God's desire for the seventh day ideal is thwarted by our desire to rule on our own terms. And what we'll look at today is how the biblical authors talk about this rebellion in the language of seventh day rest. So after giving all the covenant laws, God says,
if after all this you still don't listen, I'll discipline you for your sins 7 times over. So if the ideal is the seventh day rest, the anti-ideal is the exile from Eden multiplied by 7. It all builds up to verse 33. I'll scatter you among the nations. I'll draw out my sword and pursue you. Your land will be laid waste. Your cities lie in ruins. Verse 34. Then the land will get to enjoy the Sabbath years. All the time that it lies desolate and you're in the country of your enemies, the land will finally get that Sabbath rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. All the time that it lies desolate, the land will have the rest that it didn't get during the Sabbaths that you were living on it. It's very interesting.
This warning comes true. Israel is exiled from their land, and in their exile, they get to read this warning and find meaning for what is happening.
The exile is gaining a meaning here. Whatever the exile is, it's going to be restoring the lost Sabbaths, the lost seventh day and seventh years and seven times 7 years. It's about restoring that to the land because you didn't give it to the land.
So today on the show, we continue our discussion on the theme of seventh day rest. Thanks for joining us. Here we go. You know, I noticed that these conversations, when we start them back up, this is like the eighth episode in Sabbath. And I think we get more and more succinct in how we...
It's helpful.
Yeah. It's like this exercise in how do we tell the whole story.
Yeah.
And we get better and better at it.
Yep. That's right. Okay. Do you want to try your hand? I think I did the last summary.
Yeah.
Intro.
Sure. We're talking about the Sabbath, although we're not talking about the Sabbath. We're really talking about what does it mean to to be in a state of completeness and rest, where things are the way they should be, I guess is one way to put it. And in Genesis 1 and 2, it kind of creates that portrait of that ideal. God creates the world in 6 days. On the seventh day, he stops his work of creation. He settles in to creation. He appoints humans to rule and reign and rest with him in this beautiful garden. And you get this picture of a place that is abundant. And they're called to work and serve in it, but it's not the kind of working that you do when you're like grinding it out and it's breaking your back. It's like the kind of work where it's you show up and it's this cooperative kind of like the land is producing for you. And and it's almost this playful kind of work. The kind of, you know, some scientists call it flow, where it's just like you're in this state of like, it doesn't feel like work, but there's a lot of productivity.
Yes, yes.
And that's the ideal. Whatever that actually, I mean, we all kind of know we want that.
Yeah, yep.
And we all try for that in our lives. But humanity doesn't get to stay in that state. There's a rebellion. We don't want to cooperate with God and rule with him. We want to rule with our own wisdom. And there's an exile, and now there's no rest. Now into it's the grind.
The anti-Sabbath land.
Anti-Sabbath land.
Yeah, inverted Sabbath land. Upside down. Where you, now the humans treat the ground as a slave, and then the slave, and then that slave, the ground, in turn, works the humans to death.
Yeah. Back to the dust of the earth.
They start killing each other. Yeah, that's Genesis 3, verses 16 to 19.
I think we all get this intuitively. It's like we desire this rest, but we know that really life is this grind, grinding us back to dust. And why do we have this sense of this ideal rest? Where does that come from? Will it ever be achieved? And the biblical story is saying, yes, you have that for a reason. God designed it that way, and God wants to bring humanity back there. And the narrative continues with God choosing the family of Abraham and saying, I'm going to give you this rest and a land of abundance, and you will be my people, and you'll kind of regain this state. And the people of Abraham, the Israelites, end up as slaves. They're not like ruling with God in a beautiful land. They're slaves in Egypt.
That's right.
And so they have to be liberated from their slavery. And the story of their liberation from slavery mirrors the image of God creating the world out of disorder. And so now you get kind of like these two perspectives of the same idea, which is how do we get to rest? Well, one is God has to just take disorder and order it in mm-hmm. a way.
Liberate it from death disorder. And darkness and disorder.
But also, he needs to take us who are kind of enslaved mm-hmm. to, in the story, enslaved to Egypt,
yeah.
but the powers and the and
right.
corrupt institutions, yeah. and has to mm-hmm. liberate humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also mm-hmm. all the images of their liberation, or all these creation mm-hmm. images.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with this, hey, now go and rest in this new land.
Yeah, yes. Exodus 15, God's bringing his people into an inheritance where he will plant them
mm.
and live among them and dwell among them. The word dwell is spelled with the same letters as Shabbat, Sabbath, mm. in Exodus 15. So it's called the mountain of his inheritance. It's mm. all this Eden imagery of
yeah.
resting with God on the holy mountain.
Yeah.
That's what the liberated slaves who were liberated on the night of the first day that they celebrate for 7 days, that liberation, and then on their way to the new garden mountain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, wrapped nice. That was the Exodus story. Then the tabernacle.
Then the tabernacle. Yeah. If creation is God's temple, all of creation is God's temple.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is that God rests here with us. That has been lost. The mm. tabernacle becomes this microcosm, this
yeah.
little image of reclaiming
mm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Moses is given blueprints
mm-hmm.
of how to build this.
Mm-hmm.
And in the blueprints have this Sabbath structure.
Yes, that's
where
right.
it's like
yeah, yeah.
it's created in six speeches. And mm-hmm. on the seventh speech,
mm-hmm.
it's all about resting.
Mm-hmm.
So just like it's being now ingrained into our psyche through these narratives of like
yeah.
there's this, supposed to be this pattern
mm.
of
mm.
creating and then resting and stopping.
Yeah.
And you're kind of asking like, well, why is that so important? Why is it so important to mm. stop on the seventh day?
Mm-hmm.
It's in this. It's even in the blueprints.
Yes, that's right.
Of the temple
yeah.
or the tabernacle.
Yeah.
And then you get the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And it's one of the commandments
yep.
to rest on the seventh day.
Yeah. It's a rhythm of their life as they wander through the desert.
Yeah, they're told to collect manna
yes.
for 6 days. On yeah. the seventh day, don't collect any.
Yep. Trust that there will be enough on the next day.
Yeah, and as we began to talk about it, it's really about this sense of trust that there will be enough
yeah.
and that my anxiety and struggle isn't going to bring rest ultimately.
Yeah.
God will bring it.
Yep.
And I'm not supposed to just wait for it
yeah.
in the future.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm supposed to actually
mm-hmm.
seize it now,
mm-hmm.
Even though we mm-hmm. still live in a world of disorder and chaos.
Yeah.
I can stop.
That's right.
And I can take a break and I can
yeah.
practice like new creation has begun.
That's right. Yeah. And for an Israelite, they look at the center of their camp. They see the little micro dwelling of Yahweh in their midst as also an advanced symbol of the day when Yahweh's presence will fill all of creation.
Yeah.
Like the ideal seventh day in mm-hmm. Genesis 1. So if that's what the tabernacle represents, both a present reality of a future hope, then the seventh day rest of the Sabbath isn't just, it's the same. Remember what the tabernacle and temple are to space,
mm-hmm.
the Sabbath or the seventh day rests are to time.
Yeah.
They're present symbols and signs and foretastes of the future.
The future
ultimate
space
seventh
time.
Day. Yeah. Such a thank you, Abraham Heschel, for that wonderful concept. The Sabbath as a temple in time.
Mm.
Yeah, it's good.
Cathedral of time.
He used the phrase cathedral. But what he means is a sacred space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we start looking at just this obsession with the seven.
Yeah, then Leviticus just goes like Richter, off
yeah.
the Richter scale.
You got the seventh day Sabbath.
Yeah.
But then you've got,
mm-hmm.
man.
The seventh year rest. Well, no, let's start just so... It's a good thing there isn't an every 7 hour rest.
every seven minutes.
You say the Shema or something. But every seventh day, then it blows up to on an annual cycle.
Yeah.
You've got
all these feasts.
Oh, yep. Yeah, that's right.
So the first one is Passover.
Yeah.
And after the Passover is the meal that begins at night.
Yep. Yeah.
And then there's a 7 day.
7 day unleavened bread.
Unleavened bread.
Yep.
Feast.
Yep.
And that's all pointing towards liberation,
yep.
which is what Sabbath is for.
Yeah,
it's about
right.
our future liberation.
Liberation into the land of rest. Yep. Then there's the after you go into the land, and then after you get whenever the, you get your harvest,
yeah,
the first Sabbath after you get your harvest, you bring a first fruits thank you card to God in the temple. As like a thank you,
yeah,
symbol. Yep. Mm. Then after first fruits, do you remember?
Trying to remember. This is the last one in the first half of
yeah,
the year.
Yeah, it's a, it's the
oh
it's
yeah, 50 days.
50 yeah, count 50, 7 times 7.
Yeah.
49 days Pentecost. And then you have an extra day of rest.
Yeah, so 50th. It's like, hey, yeah. Are we excited about sevens? Let's get real excited about sevens. 7 times
yeah,
7.
Yeah, 7 times 7 days. Yeah. That's right.
And so that means then on the 50th day, you've just celebrated a Sabbath cuz mm-hmm. it's the 7th Sabbath cycle after yep. Passover. And now on the 50th day, mm-hmm. you're going to do an extra special
yeah,
Sabbath.
Of that next round of harvest. You know, different plants, different crops give their first harvest at different times of yeah. the spring or early summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the idea.
And then we get into the trumpets.
So that's the first half of the year.
First half of the year.
Second half of the year begins with the seventh month.
Seventh month.
Yeah.
The seventh month, of course, is super important.
Yep.
So important that it's even thought of as like a new year.
Yes.
Of sorts.
Yeah, that's right. Rosh Hashanah.
Yep. Yeah. So that's one of them. Rosh Hashanah, the trumpet.
Blow some trumpets. Blow,
yeah.
Yep.
The
yep.
new year comes in. Here's the seventh month.
Mm-hmm.
And then seventh month is packed
yes.
with yeah. festivals to remind you
yeah.
that there's this ultimate rest coming.
Yes. After you blow the trumpets to inaugurate the seventh month, then on the 10th day is the Day of Atonement.
Oh, yeah, the
where
day
Israel's
yeah.
sins are symbolically exiled from the camp.
It's like right in the center of the calendar year.
Yeah, that's right.
On the seventh month, in the middle of the seventh month. On mm-hmm. the 10th day of the seventh month?
10th day, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
10th yeah. day of the seventh month. And yeah. 10 is obviously very important
yep.
image as well.
Yep, from Genesis 1, 10 words, Exodus, 10 plagues, Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments.
Which are also 10 words.
Yep.
And
yeah.
then a seven-day festival. Yep. Of
yeah.
Not working,
yep.
hanging out.
Yeah,
and
living in a little sacred garden tent
yeah.
that you've made out of the
beautiful, luxurious branches.
Leaves and branches of beautiful fruit trees by, that came from a river.
Yeah.
That's the description. It's
yeah.
so, like, it just couldn't be more overt
yeah.
with the Eden hyperlinks right there.
Yeah.
Tree, because it has to be from a tree. That's beautiful with fruit by a river.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So if you're an ancient Israelite, your yeah. entire year now is
yes.
all
that's right.
revolving around these festivals that are all
mm-hmm.
helping you remember
yes.
where this is all heading.
That's right.
Where's history heading?
Yep.
Or where history heading?
Yeah.
Where's time heading?
Yeah. 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 Where's the story?
Where's the story going?
Of our world going.
And it's actually asking us
yeah.
to practice mm-hmm. the future reality of where it's headed.
Yeah, here in the present. On a yearly basis to structure your concept of time
yeah.
on this micro rhythm of an annual.
Yeah, you can't plan right. anything in your life without first
yeah.
seeing how it's going to fit into this.
Totally, yes. And if that's true on the annual cycle, it's even amplified on the Jubilee cycle.
So it's the weekly cycle,
yeah.
annual cycle, and then...
yeah.
There's
the 7 times 7 annual cycle.
Every 7 years, it's
yeah.
extra special.
Yes, that's right. Yep. A year of release.
A year of release.
For debt slaves and forgiveness of debts.
Yeah. Yep. That's called the Sabbath year.
It's called the year of release.
Year of release.
Yep.
And then, that's not enough.
Nope.
Let's step it up one more.
Totally. 7 times 7 years.
Yeah. Every seventh of those 7
yeah.
year cycles.
Yeah.
Which would be 49.
Well, the 49th year, you do the 7th 7.
Yeah. And then the 50th year.
But then on the Day of Atonement of that 7th 7, you blow a trumpet
yeah.
and inaugurate
a full year.
Additional year
yeah.
that is the year of Jubilee.
And in the year of Jubilee, things get crazy.
Yeah.
Anyone who has lost their property,
yep.
it all goes back.
Yep.
Big reset.
Yeah. If you file bankruptcy, all those assets become yours again in terms of the farming community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And also full reset.
Full reset.
To the Eden ideal, which would come once in a lifetime for most Israelites. Because
yeah.
every 50 years, most Israelites would only ever experience one of them. Oh, and the disruption point.
Yeah. How disruptive this would be.
Yeah. This is a full economic, social. I mean, use
yeah.
whatever verbs you want. Political, it's a reset button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, everyone is creating the future, right? When you start a business, you're trying to create a certain future state that you want. When you give a loan to someone, you're thinking in the future what you want. When you're building a house, when you're creating a family, all of this, it's all about where's this all heading?
Yeah.
And if built into it are all of these disruptions, like, hey, every 7 days, stop.
Yeah.
Every seventh year, debt's released.
Yeah.
Every 7 by 7 years, like, all the assets go back. It's like you can't plan and you can't imagine a future without this completely coloring the way you do it.
Correct. Yeah, that was the original point you made a little while ago. No, that's a good point. And it builds in the suspicion of what we would call the natural course of things. In the biblical story is the post-exile,
the natural
course Eden reality.
Being death.
Yeah.
And slavery.
Death and slavery.
And people abusing power.
And abusing each other.
And abusing each other.
Yeah. So built in is this like divine interruption where God says, hey, everybody, cut it out, start over. It's like only allows things to
decompose so much.
Decompose so much. Yeah. Which, as we're going to see, even with that in place, the story still doesn't go well.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a good summary.
That took a little while.
It took a little while, but it was fun. Okay, so we just walked out of the Jubilee in Leviticus 25. Mm-hmm. We walk into Leviticus 26. We read, starting verse 3. Everybody, if y'all walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to carry them out, then I'll give you rains in their seasons. Oh, yeah, we need that for crops. The land will yield its produce. Sweet. The trees of the field will bear fruit. Mm-hmm. Your threshing will last until the grape gathering. And then the grape gathering will last until you sow seed. And you will eat your food to the completeness. And again, in Hebrew, that word full or complete is
The word
spelled Sabbath. With the same three letters as the word seven.
Or seven.
Yep.
I'm always getting that confused.
Yeah, that's all right. It's okay.
Sabbath stop, seven, which is the day of Sabbath, is the same letters as the word complete.
Yep, that's right. I'll give you shalom in your land. You'll live securely there. I'll give you shalom. I'll eliminate the harmful wild animals, and no sword will pass through your land. Go down to verse 11.
It sounds like Eden.
Dude, totally. Actually, sorry, verse 9. I will turn towards you and make you fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, the Eden command.
Yeah, totally. Command. Yep. I'll confirm my covenant with you. Verse 11, I will make my dwelling among you. This is important then. Reflecting back, the Eden ideal has baked into it
God's presence,
a temple presence.
Yeah.
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 If you're reading
the temple building,
that's right. That's right.
Creation is the temple.
Correct. Look at verse 12. This is key. I will walk among you.
Oh, that's the Eden verb, right?
Yes, this is the first time it's the phrase of Adam and Eve after eating from the tree, but they heard the sound of Yahweh God walking in the midst, hithalech. So there's the word halach, which means to walk, but the hithalech is like...
Just to roam.
Wandering, strolling. We might call it strolling. Yeah. Actually, it's a great English phrase for hithalech. Yeah, yeah, strolling. So this is the same verb. I will stroll among you.
Strolling among us.
It's just full on Eden reset here. So this, again, reflects back to the Jubilee, the Eden ideal. If Israel is obedient, then what they will experience is the full Sabbath, seventh day blessing of Eden. Yeah. Okay, so what if they don't?
What if they eat of the tree of knowing good and evil?
If they don't, Leviticus depicts the results as an upside-down jubilee.
Yeah, use that jubilee phrase.
Well, you'll see. Verse 14. But if you don't listen to me or carry out my commands. So the first thing is, if you listen to carry out my commands, Eden. If you don't listen to me and carry out my commands.
Oh, can we stop for a second?
Yep.
In Eden, the command was eat of all the trees.
That's right.
Just eat everything.
Correct.
Just not this one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Not the tree of knowing good and evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, in this context,
correct,
God actually created a covenant with a people, an ancient people, mm-hmm. and gave them a whole bunch of commands.
Mm-hmm.
But we're supposed to see those as kind of parallel ideas.
The command, the covenant commands are the parallel to the command about the tree.
Okay.
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah. Which, again, helps. We're going to make a video about this, about the trees of Eden.
Yeah.
Because this is very helpful. This kind of provides, remember how this works, later iterations of a design pattern provide backwards
feedback loop
insight into earlier patterns. So Israel choosing what to do with the Torah, commands of the Torah, will determine whether or not they go into exile or whether they get life in the land.
Yeah.
And that's the same plot tension in the garden.
Cool.
If you don't carry out these commands, if you reject my decrees, if you abhor my laws, feel contempt towards my laws. Mm. Man, Yahweh asking us to give to the poor and leave our fields for wild animals every seventh year. That's crazy.
Mm.
I'm not going to do that. So if you fail to carry out my commands and so violate the covenant, that's a good example that the commands aren't just random. They're covenant. They're the marriage terms.
Yeah.
Then this is what I will do to you. And from verse 16 through the end of the chapter, it's just a long list of stiff consequences. And which strikes modern readers as really
heavy-handed,
over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember once the summer, I think I was right out of, I just finished college and was not able to put my Bible degree to use yet. So I became an assistant handyman at an apartment complex.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine that.
Yeah, that's where I learned how to do drywall and all the skills I learned, which weren't that many, but I learned that.
That's valuable.
It was super valuable. So we were turning over this apartment. People had just moved out. We were patching some holes. We had to replace some plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember we were painting in the living room. He and I were both part of the skate church ministry. And so we learned from the guy who started it, Paul, that listening to the Bible while you work is just an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
So one summer, don't judge us, we were thought, let's listen to the whole Pentateuch this week.
Yeah.
As we're just like working.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome. Except one time we got to Leviticus 26.
Yeah.
And
all the curses.
And once the covenant curses, it takes about 5 to 7 minutes to read aloud.
Uh-huh.
And it's just all just dropping the divine judgment hammer.
Yeah.
And so we're listening to this and a lady walks by.
Oh,
who lives there, and she sees that we're working, so she comes in to ask us like a question about like, hey, you know, my something on my window doesn't work or something. And she comes in and it's like, I will punish you for your sin 7 times over and you'll be defeated by your enemies and those who hate you will rule over you, you know.
Yeah.
And this lady was just like, what are these guys listening to?
Yeah.
She was weirded out.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a memory I have.
That is so funny.
Leviticus 26.
It's its own version of like heavy metal music or something.
Yeah.
But just listening to like covenant curses.
Totally. You know, one thing helped me in graduate school, multiple things did. But once I was in a class where we were reading other ancient Near Eastern literature. We had a whole section on ancient covenant treaties. There's lots of them from the ancient world.
Okay.
The Arameans and the Hittites.
Yeah.
The way they wrote up covenant treaties was like this.
Yeah.
And actually, Leviticus 26 looks kind of tame compared to some of the covenant curses that the Hittite kings would bring on their enemies. Like they would get like, may your cow's flesh rot. And it's a difficult line to translate, but this one king, Shupaluli Uma, is...
You just made that word up.
No, that's his name. No, I'm serious. Yeah, that's it. Supi Luli Uma, or Shupi Luli Uma.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a Hittite king. Anyway, from the 1300s BC.
That's an unfortunate
so anyhow,
name for a Hittite
king. He has this line in it, and we just, like, it became a joke in the department, because it's hard to translate, but it's something about may your chickens peck out the eyes of all your animals.
Oh, gosh.
It's like of these like rabid chickens. May your chickens become rabid.
You know
rabid.
What this reminds me of is the Monty Python skit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right.
I fought in your general direction.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So just to say, this is a thing when you want to pump up the rhetoric and say, dude, be faithful to this agreement that
you're
we're saying
it's
right
rhetoric.
Now. I'm saying it's a form of covenantal rhetoric.
They would have read this and they would have been like, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with these.
Totally. And it's not that they would say, oh, no big deal. You know, this
oh, yeah,
is
no.
What you say.
It's supposed to be
it
heavy.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying this isn't, it's an ancient convention that the biblical authors are framing the covenant in. That's just helpful.
Okay.
Even though it sounds crazy to that lady who walked in and heard.
Well, and it sounds crazy when you even read it now.
Okay, yes.
It feels intense.
All that to say is, if you don't listen to my commands, I'll bring sudden terror on you. Leviticus 26 and verse 16. Wasting disease, fever, that will destroy your sight and sap your strength. I mean, it's the opposite. We're just turning all the blessings of Eden.
Yeah.
And we're just turning each one of them upside
down. Inverting them. You're being ground back to dust.
Yeah, totally. I'll set my face against you. Instead of God walking with you, now you've made God your enemy. Those who hate you will rule over you. You'll flee even when no one's chasing you. And then this is the first repetition of a key line. If after all this you still don't listen, I'll discipline you for your sins seven times over. So if the ideal is the seventh day rest.
The anti-ideal.
The anti-ideal, yeah.
It's like a seventh day, seven times cursing.
Is exile from Eden multiplied by seven.
Hmm.
So it goes on, verse 21, if you remain hostile towards me and refuse to listen, I'll multiply your afflictions seven times over as your sins deserve. Verse 23, if in spite of these things you don't accept my correction, then I'll afflict you for your sins seven times over. It says it four times in the chapter. You'll get a seven.
It's compounding.
Yeah, compounding. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay.
Then it's called an exponent.
It all builds up to verse 33. I'll scatter you among the nations. I'll draw out my sword and pursue you. Your land will be laid waste. Your cities lie in ruins. Verse 34. Then the land will get to enjoy the Sabbath years. All the time that it lies desolate and you're in the country of your enemies, the land will finally get that Sabbath rest and enjoy its Sabbaths.
Interesting.
All the time that it lies desolate, the land will have the rest that it didn't get during the Sabbaths that you were living on it.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's very interesting. The land, you remember this, in the seventh year release.
Yeah, you let the land rest.
Yeah, just it's parallel. You release your slaves, you liberate them because they're not your property.
You don't really own them.
They all belong to God, just like you do. And so also the land.
Yeah, we talked about this, how, you know, it's such a, I mean, I don't know how long in human history we've thought this, but like we own land. And it's such ingrained in our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can own land.
Yeah.
And there's something about the Eden ideal where you don't actually own the land.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, we didn't talk about this in the Jubilee chapter, Leviticus 25.
Yeah.
But that's exactly the logic is you release the land every 49th and 50th year. And it says the land is mine. You are tenants upon it. You're renters on my land.
Yeah.
That's totally the concept.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, when Israel isn't doing the seven-day rest, the seventh year release, and the Jubilee release, it's as if the land is building up a resentment.
It's building up like,
not
debt.
Resentment. It's building up like you owe me.
Yeah.
Hey, well, another Jubilee that nobody did.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys owe me.
Yeah, interesting.
Check. So we're building up all towards this symbolic depiction of exile as a 70 or as a 7 times 70.
A 70.
Yep. We'll just wait for Jeremiah. But exile is going to be envisioned as...
It's not
going to
be a quick exile.
No, no.
It's been compounding.
But also, the exile is gaining a meaning here. Mm. Whatever the exile is, it's going to be restoring the lost Sabbaths. The lost seventh day and seventh years and 7 times 7 years. It's about restoring that to the land because you didn't give it to the land.
So to back up, make sure that everyone is following, including myself.
Yeah.
Israel's getting the land.
Yes.
It's a promised kind of new creation,
That's
Eden
right.
kind of place.
Yeah.
They got to keep these covenants,
mm-hmm.
and it will be Eden.
Mm-hmm.
It will be amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
And all the nations will be blessed.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't, there's this foreshadowing of you're gonna get kicked out.
Yes.
And it's the exact same narrative logic
That's right.
of Adam and Eve
Genesis
in the garden.
One. That's right.
And they don't obey the covenant command.
Yeah.
And they're exiled out of the garden.
That's right.
And this is something that actually happened in mm-hmm. human history. Israel
yes.
was taken over
yep.
by Babylon. And they had to leave the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so why did that happen? And what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's the significance of that? And you're saying embedded in here
yeah.
is all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a vision that humans, what we call the natural world in the biblical story, is an existence of humans living at odds with our real nature.
Hmm.
And we're living at odds with our environment.
With our nature and the nature.
Yeah. We're living at odds with each other, and we're living at odds with our environment. That we don't relate to it the way that we ought to.
Mm. Which is you don't push it to the brink.
Yeah, it's not ours to do what we want with.
Mm.
It's a gift, and what you do with gifts is figure out the intention of the giver for what you do with the gift, right?
Really? That's what you do with the gift?
I guess it's not what everybody does with a gift. But yeah, you give, this is a classic scene, you a father giving a son or daughter their first, like
car.
Oh, I was going to say like pocket knife. You know.
You've got young
and
kids.
And this isn't for like stabbing the couch or your brother, This is for, whittling sticks, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, the vision is that creation is a gift.
It's a gift, but it's not a gift in like, hey, now you own this. It's a
no,
gift in like...
No, you oversee it.
Oversee
on
it.
On my behalf.
The gift is the ability, mm-hmm. is the opportunity...
I understand.
...to rule with God.
Yeah. All right, yeah. So that the pocket knife analogy only works halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's still mom or dad's pocket knife.
It's sharing your inheritance.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So you get the idea here. You honor the land... Knowing it's not yours, knowing that when God fills this place and I trust God's wisdom and treat God and neighbor and land and beast by God's wisdom, then Eden will be the result. If we don't, it's an inverted upside down seventh day.
Yeah.
Verse 40. However, if they're in the land of their enemies and they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their ancestors, their unfaithfulness that they committed to me, they're acting with hostility towards me. If their uncircumcised heart becomes humbled.
Is that the first time that phrase is used?
Mm, mm-hmm. Yes. Moses is going to pick it up in Deuteronomy.
Yeah.
But this is the first time it's used. Huh. So it's obviously a metaphor.
Yeah.
So their circumcision is about the removal of skin.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's a symbol of the covenant.
It's a symbol, yep, of the covenant. And it's a multi-layered symbol with lots of different layers of meaning.
Hmm.
But here, it can be that what needs to get taken away is obstinance and hostility and stubbornness.
Hmm.
And so, if their unhealed hearts, if their stubborn hearts become humbled, they make amends for their iniquity, verse 42, then I will remember my covenant with whom? With Jacob, my covenant with Isaac, my covenant with Abraham. What was that covenant?
Blessing.
Blessing for all the nations through Israel living on this land, the promised land. And look, I'll remember my covenant, verse 42, and I'll remember the land. So Israel's in exile, and they humble themselves. I'll remember my covenants that I made, and I'll remember the land.
The land's really important here.
It's really important.
The land gets the rest it deserved.
Yeah.
And the land can be remembered.
Yeah. The land is made to be eaten. Think about the logic here. I'm just, maybe I've thought this before. I'm just pondering it in this moment. God made the land to become eaten through people. Right? I'll remember my covenant. That's God remembering my people. I'll remember the land. It's as if, man, this is the same logic as Romans 8. The creation is liberated from its bondage to decay when the children of God are glorified in resurrection and new creation. The creation is waiting for humans to get their act together.
So it can
that
be
never
liberated.
Happens. So the creation's waiting for humans to get recreated. So it can become what God intended it to become. That logic is right here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bible Project Podcast. It's December 2019, and this month in December, we want to ask you to consider joining the Bible Project if you haven't already. This is a crowdfunded project, and we have many wonderful patrons who have allowed us to do some incredible work. We want to highlight the work that we've done so far, but also want to let you know that what we do in our organization is that in December, we take all the money that comes in and we use that to know how far and fast we can go in the next year. So all the money that comes in December 2019 really is funding our mission for 2020, kind of supercharging it. You can be a part of our December join campaign at thebibleproject.com/vision. One of the exciting things that happened in 2019 that we're going to continue in 2020 is our localization of our videos into new languages. Today, I want to introduce you to one of those localization teams.
Hey, this is Dan, the podcast producer at The Bible Project.
And this is Allison with the localization team at The Bible Project.
Yeah, hey, Allison. Like John just said, we're taking this month of December to highlight some of the really cool things that people are working on here at The Bible Project, but they don't always make it to the front page.
Yeah, that's right. There are a lot of moving parts here at The Bible Project. And thanks to our supporters, we've had a big push towards localization.
So I've often heard that word. People toss it around the office a lot. I still don't know exactly what it means.
Yeah, I hear that often. So localization is basically just a fancy word for recreating our English videos into other languages and cultures. A lot of people ask me why we don't just do subtitles and call it a day.
That's something I've totally been wondering myself.
Yeah, well, if you've ever seen a Bible Project video, you'll notice that Tim and John's voices often play off of on-screen text and imagery, and we want to recreate that experience as much as possible. So we basically create a team from scratch, like artists, voiceover talent, and translators. Then we send them our files and work with them as they morph our videos into their native language.
That is really cool. Sounds very complicated. You wanted to highlight several different languages this month, so who do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, so I am stoked to present the Brazilian Portuguese team. They are incredibly talented, and we've really enjoyed working with them. So, to remake the videos, we work with Brazilian animators, illustrators, translators, and even a Brazilian Portuguese voice for Tim.
So, close your eyes and imagine Tim speaking Portuguese to you somewhere on the beach.
Yeah, and you won't have to wait till long to figure out what that's going to sound like, because the channel's going to launch in January, and we'll have about 50 videos published by the end of the year.
That is really amazing, Allison.
Yeah, we wanted to share this team with the podcast audience because it's your support that allows us to bring our videos to Brazilian Portuguese community, which is a pretty big deal because there's almost 200 million Brazilian Portuguese speakers and millions more that speak other Portuguese dialects.
I just looked it up. It's actually one of the top 10 languages in the world.
Wow, fun fact. Fun Brazilian Portuguese fact. We're very excited and we're so grateful for y'all.
Yes, thank you, everybody. All right, so Bible Project in Brazilian Portuguese. You can meet them. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Mirella. I am Brazilian. I do live in Los Angeles, California. And my role within the Bible Project has been a language advisor. And I basically work around the same books as the rest of the Brazil team. My favorite video is definitely Ephesians. makes me cry every time. For 2020, I'm really looking forward to finishing the Read Scripture series and hopefully continue with newer series.
Hello, my name is Issa Miclair Gonçalves. Minha função aqui é desenhar as fontes dentro do pôster do Bible Project. Estou gostando muito porque é uma realização pessoal minha também, que é através de oração. Também é uma das partes que eu mais gosto de fazer, dos pôsteres que eu mais gostei de fazer, foi o pôster de João.
You just heard Sammy Claire share his passion for this. He lives in Chapecó, Brazil, and his role within the Bible Project is to create the fonts and the posters. And he said he's loving this experience. It's been such a personal achievement that has come to his life through prayer. He also said that his favorite poster to work on was the poster of the Book of John.
Hello, my name is Rafael. I work on the Read Scriptures project in Brazil. Now I am a coordinator of the project here. We are working now the last books of the New Testament, and in the next month probably we will start to do the Old Testament.
Hi, my name is Bia Piva. I'm one of the Portuguese editors on the Project Bible.
Hi, I am Adriano. I'm working on animation of the Portuguese version of the videos from the Bible Project. And I'd like to invite all Brazilians around the world to check it out on YouTube, because I know you love it too. Ciao, ciao.
Is there like a popular way of saying goodbye in Portuguese or in Brazilian?
Ciao. It's like Italian.
Okay, say it.
Valeu. Can I say that?
Yeah, that's a good one.
É isso aí, pessoal.
É isso aí, pessoal.
Like, that's all, folks.
É isso aí, pessoal. Welcome back to the Elbow program, Kracht van die Woord. Ons het nou eerlijk geluister na hierdie gesprek rondom die rust van die grond, die Sabbat. Ons gaan volgende week weer aan daarmee. En nou gaan ons eers kyk weer terug by Matteus in ons program waar ons deur Matteus lees en daaroor mediteer en dink en verstaan wat is dit wat die Here vir ons sê en hoe kan ons dit toepas in ons eie lewe. Ons is vanoggend besig met Matteus 9 van vers 18 tot 26. Die opskrif hier in die 2020 vertaling is genesing van 'n vrou en opwekking van 'n dogter. Ek noem dit om te lewe en om rein te wees. En ek haal sekere temas uit hierdie gedeeltes en ek noem dit so. Jy kan dit ook lees in Lukas 8 vers 40 tot 56 en Markus 5 vers 21 tot 43. Ons lees nou uit Matteus dan, van vers 18. Hy was nog besig om die dinge aan hulle te sê, en kyk, daar kom 'n sekere leier, kniel voor hom en sê, my dogter het pas gesterf, maar kom lê u hand op haar en sy sal leef. Jesus het opgestaan en hom gevolg, en sy disippels ook. Daar het toe skielik 'n vrou wat al 12 jaar lank aan bloedvloeiing gely het, van agteraf nader gekom en die soem van sy bokkleed aangeraak. Want het sy vir haarself gesê, as ek tog net sy bokkleed kan aanraak, sal ek gesond word. Jesus het omgedraai haar gesien en gesê, hou moed, dogter, jou geloof het jou gered. En van daardie oomblik af was die vrou gesond. Toe Jesus by die huis van die leier kom en die fluitspelers sien en die klomp mense wat luidruchtig huil, het hy gesê, gaan weg, want die dogtertjie het nie gesterf nie, maar slaap net. Hy het hom echter uitgelag. Toe die klomp mense uitgejaag is, het hy ingegaan en haar aan die hand geneem en die dogtertjie het opgestaan. Die nuus hieroor het deur die hele omgewing versprei. Ons het gekyk in Matteus en die bergrede deurgewerk met hierdie ongelooflike, helder, maar woorde van Jesus wat die mense lewe omkeer, wat jy bring daarby om te hoor hoe hy met gesag praat en hoe ons op een, ons noem het een onderste boom manier, want hy sê jy moet jou vijanden lief hê, bijvoorbeeld. Dis nie hoe mense normaalweg dink nie. Maar het hy ons geraak deur sy woorde. En dan Matteus 8 en 9 kom hy op een ander manier en hy wys vir ons deur dit wat hy doen. Deur mense gezond te maak, belaatses te genees, mense te laat sien. Hier, een dogtertjie uit die dood opwek. Een vrou wat in bloedvloeiing ly vir 12 jaar genees. Jesus wys ook hoe hy met gesag ook die nuwe lewe in die koninkryk bring. En dit is waarmee hy besig is. En besig is tot nou toe. Om te kom om alles nuut te maak. Maar hierdie twee verhale wat ons in Matteus, wat so in mekaar geweef is, kry in Matteus 8, 9 vers 18 tot 26, word so saam gegroepeer, want beide hierdie verhale van Lukas sê vir ons, dis Jairus se dogtertjie, en dis ken dit goed as ons sê Jairus se dogtertjie wat opgewek is, en die vrou met die bloedvloeiing, want beide hierdie verhale gaan oor die reinigingswette wat die jode baie sterk gevolg het. Dit gaan oor reinheid en besoedeling. En dit is goed vir ons om miskien net wanneer ons dit nou lees, ook te weet, ja, hierdie was streng wette wat nagevolg is. En bo aan hierdie lyste was juist om aan 'n dooie te raak, of wanneer een vrou bloedvloeiing of menstrueer, dit was van die boonste dinge op die onreinheidlys wat jy jou moet gaan reinig as jy daarmee in aanraking gekom het. In die tyd voor die mediese wetenskap wat ons vandag het, was hygiëne baie belangrik. Dit was nie maar net een wet, een klomp reëls wat net ingebring is nie. Nee, die Here sê dikwels, hy haat die dood. Die dood het die vernietiging gebring, die bose, die sonde, wat die dood tot gevolg gehad het. En in die ou tyd, voor die mediese wetenskap, was reinheid belangrik vir lewe, sodat jy nie siek word en sterwe nie. Want gebrek aan hygiëne het baie infeksies gebring, aansteeklike siektes wat daardeur nie maklik gekeer kon word nie. Ons het eintlik eers nou weer met COVID die belangrikheid van hande was en om jou af te sonder as jy siek is, leer ken. Ons het weer bewus geword daarvan. En wat het ons gedoen? Ek weet, baie mense het baie sleg ervaar, maar dit is gedoen ook vir die veiligheid van mense. Regulasies is uitgevaardig om mense se lewens dus nie in gevaar te stel nie. Mediese personeel is altyd daarvan bewus, nie net in COVID nie. Jy sien dikwels hoe hulle hande was. Ouers leer ook, wel, so het ek geleer, as kind, gaan was jou hande voor jy eet, om hygiënies te lewe. Dit was echter nie so in die oudtyd nie. En die Here het hierdie voorskrifte aan Israel gegee om hulle lewe te beveilig. Die reinheidswette was baie belangrik. En twee van hierdie wette kom in hierdie gedeelte, soos ons nou genoem het, voor. Om nie aan dooie liggame te raak nie, en vrouwe wat inwendige bloeding gehad het, om dat dit besoedeling kan gee. En dit is van die redes waarom hierdie verse so opmerklik was. Want het gaan hier oor een vrou met bloedvloeiing wat onder Jesus raak en Jesus wat in een dooie lichaam raak. Matthias en die ander evangeliese leerders en hoordes was Jode en hulle sou geweet het dadelik waaroor gaan hierdie verhale en wat hier gebeur dat Jesus eintlik onrein geword het met sy dubbele optrede of wat hy toegelaat het. Hy sou hom moes bad en sy klere was en wacht tot die volgende dag voordat hy weer met ander mense in aanraking kom. Maar wat gebeur hier? Jairus, Lukas sê, dit is Jairus, die hoof van die sinagoge. Maar Jesus en Matteus word van hom gesê dat hierdie man net eintlik 'n leier, 'n belangrike man was. En hy kom kniel hier voor Jesus. Hierdie belangrike man hou nie sy waardigheid nie. Dit gaan nie maar net oor status hier nie. Sy dogter het gesterf. Sy kind. En hier is iemand wat mag het oor die dood. Here, kom lê net die hande op haar en sy sal leef. En dadelik staan Jesus op en volg hom na sy huis waar sy dogtertjie is wat gesterf het. Vir my is selfs hierdie woorde van Matteus, Jesus het opgestaan, is eintlik vir myself, selfs die woorde is so opmerklik, want in hierdie gedeeltes, Matteus 8 en 9, sê die Here, dink wel, staan op en loop. Maar hy sê dit vir andere, wat hy heel maak en gezond maak. Maar hier staan, Jesus het opgestaan. En Jairus gevolg. Is dit nie so helder, wat die Here vir ons sê, dat hy kom na hierdie wêreld. Hy staan op in hierdie wêreld, wat stikkend is, vol onreinheid van dood, alles die gevolg van die mense sonde. En dat eintlik hier al, vir ons sê, deur sy optrede hier, hy word, kan nie onreine gemaakt word, nie, want hy trek, hy het al die onreinheid, het hy deur sy eie besluit, Godse besluit, het hy dit op hom getrek aan die kruis, en hy het opgestaan. Kragtig kom dit nou reeds deur. Jesus is besig om die dood, die groot vyand, te oorwin. Hy is besig om die besoedeling van hierdie wêreld, soos wat ons in Bible Projects gehoor het, die grond wat moet rus, die skepping wat sug, hy is besig om alles te verander. Hy oorwin. Maar dan gebeur daar die ander story in hierdie story en ons gaan daar die musiek eers weer daarna kyk, die vrou wat aan hom raak, die vrou wat in bloedvloeiing lê. Kom ons luister na musiek en dan kom ons weer terug hierna toe, bly ingeskakel. Ons gaan voort nou met die oordenking en meditering van Matteus 9 vers 18 en 26 en soos wat Jesus dan hier na met Jairus saamgaan na sy huis en sy dogtertjie op te wek, onderbreek Matteus dit hier met 'n ander story. En net soos die leier, die hoof van die sinagoge, Jairus, om nie gesteer het aan status nie, hy het gehardloop en hy het gekniel voor Jesus. Net om by hom uit te kom, want hierdie man kan gesond maak, hy kan my dogtertjie weer terugbring in die lewe. En dit is dieselfde met hierdie vrou. Hierdie vrou wat haar moes eintlik afsonder vir 12 jaar, want sy ly aan bloedvloeiing. Sy weet, sy maak allemaal onrein, aan wie sy raak om bid sy toelaat om my hart te raak. Sy weet net, hier is hy wat my kan gesond maak. En dan druk sy deur allemaal om by Jesus te kom, net aan om hom te raak. Om gesond te word. En wat gebeur dan? Jesus word nie onrein nie, maar die vrou word rein, gesond. Nie die dood besmet Jesus nie, maar hy verander, hy oorwin, en hy verander die vrou. Jesus is op pad om die dood ook uiteindelik te vernietig. Hy bring lewe deur die vrou se onreinheid op hom te trek en dit te verander in reinheid. Die dood in lewe. Dit is wie hy is. Hy is nog baie groter as om net gesond te maak, as om by die dood op te wek. Hy is die Here wat lewe het. En hy het gewillig gekom om te ly op hierdie aarde. Om die onreinheid op hom te trek. Dieselfde gebeur met jou Jairus' dogtertjie. Hy verander die dood in lewe. En hy doen dit in hierdie hoofstuk so duidelik dat hulle kan sien wie hy is. Hulle glo hy die mag om te doen, en hy is dit. Daar is geen twyfel by of die leier of die vrou dat Jesus kan red. En dit is die woord wat hy, wat Matteus gebruik hier in vers 21 en 22 om te red, of vertaal met gesond maak en so aan, maar dis wat die woord beteken, red. Hy kan lewe gee, hy maak rein, hy red, hy het gekom om te red. En liewe luisteraar, niemand kan te onrein wees, niemand kan te stikkend of te dood wees nie. Die grootste vernietiger, die dood. Maar Jesus word deur niks afgeskrik nie, hy is die Here. Nie is die onreine van die dooie nie, niks skrik hom af nie. Ja, die mense kan lag, want sy is klaar dood. Hulle kan huil. Hulle kan onrein wees, maar hy het gekom om te red. Hy het gekom om rein te maak. Hy het gekom om nuwe lewe te gee. Matteus sê, hy het opgestaan om te red. En later sal Matteus vertel hoe hy al die onreinheid, al die gruwels, die sonde en die stikkenheid op die kruis intrek op hom. Dis of alles invloei van hierdie stikkendheid en die bose en die dood selfs in hom. So dat hy op die kruis roep, my God, waarom het u my verlaat? Want hy het alles wat verkeerd gegaan het in die skepping. Van Genesis 3 af het hy op hom ingetrek. Maar hy is deur die gees, is hy opgewek uit die dood. Het hy opgestaan. Hy, God is een wese, Vader, Seun en Heilige Gees. Hy die Here staan op, sodat almal wat glo dat hy die Here is, daarom toe kan draai en gered word. Daar is dus geen manier dat jy kan dink, ek is nie goed genoeg nie. Ek is nie rein genoeg nie. Ek het nie genoeg gedoen nie. om God se kind te wees nie. Hy roep jou, ontvang my deur die geloof, sien en kyk wie ek is. Al moet jy deure dring, tomskare al, is jy onrein. Al dink jy, daar is nie meer lewe nie. Ek is dood. Jy is skoon. Jy lewe, jy behoort aan hom. Deur die geloof ontvang dit, liewe luisteraar. Jy behoort aan Jesus. Kom ons luister nou na musiek en ons bedink hierdie uitnodiging van Jesus, van waar jy ook al is. Bly ingeskakel. Kom ons kyk nou uit 'n ander hoek weer in hierdie program Krag van die Woord na hierdie gedeelte Matteus 9. Wanneer ons hier oor dink en hier oor mediteer en reflekteer in stilte waar ek ook al is, net my gedagtes kan laat gaan. Ja, ons moet bewus wees van higiëne en skoon lewe in ons lewe. Ons leer dit van kleins af en dit is baie belangrik. Skoonmaakmiddels, baie van hulle wat jy vandag ook kry, dra eintlik by tot hierdie besoedeling van die aarde. Maar die grootste besoedeling kom nie van buitenkant af nie, maar kom van binne, van ons ou denke en ons ou lewenspatrone wat daaruit kom. Ons vorm deur ons hele lewe deur sekere denke oor wie ons is en wie God is eintlik. En wie mense is, wat werk is, wat materiële dinge is. Ou denke wat ons het. Dit is sekerlik die grootste besoedeling wat daar is. Maar wanneer ons dan Jesus sien en hom hoor en ons draai na hom en ons gee ons harte oor aan hom deur die geloof, dan ontvang ons nuwe harte. Ons ontvang sy gees. Ons is rein. God se kinders. Nie omdat ons allerhande wette nakom nie, maar omdat ons gered is deur hom, deur Jesus. Hoe kan ons dan rein lewe, hierdie nuwe lewe? Hoe kan ons lewe uit ons nuwe harte deur sy gees? Ons word heeldag deur allerhande dinge wat inkom na ons toe. En ons het dit ook in onsself wat ons die verkeerde dinge wil dink en wil glo. Wanneer ons leer om hierdie dinge te herken in ons lewe en terug te kom en uit die gees te lewe en te oefen in hierdie wêreld, dis waaroor dit gaan. Ons kan oefen deur die gees, deur saam met ander gelowiges te lewe. Kom ons neem maar net hierdie mense wat in hierdie gedeelte in Matteus 9 vers 18 tot 26 kom. Die vrou wat in bloedvloeiing gelei het, wat met haar gesondheid te sukkel, om op enige manier te worstel met iets wat jou fisies, lichamelik, siekte, of wat ook al dit is waarmee jy worstel, wat jy het. Sê die Here vir jou, ek is hier. Jy raak in hom, jy kniel voor hom, deur die Gees, kyk jy op na hom. En jy staan op sonder om te huiwer. Al moet jy deur hierdie moeilike lichamelike omstandighede gaan. Al ervaar jy hierdie gebreke in jou lichaam, wat deur mediese wetenskap vir jou ook diagnoses gegee is en jy gebruik medikasie of wat die geval ook al is. Roep die Here jy nou, staan op deur hierdie moeilike omstandighede en kom by my. Jy weet wie ek is. Volg my. Al moet jy deur massa mense deurdruk, maar kom by die Here uit. Miskien kan jy sê, ek kan my vereenselwig, miskien is ek hierdie leier. Ek het baie verantwoordelikhede by die werk, by die familie, by organisaties, by die kerk, waar ook al. En daar gebeur dinge waaraan jy niks kan doen nie. Dis buiten jou beheer. Net soos hier die, ja, hier is die dood van sy dogtertjie buiten sy beheer was. Maar jy weet, hier is die verlosser, die Here, Jesus Christus. Jy weet, hy lewe. Die Gees in jou getuig dit. Glo jy dan dat hy jou hierdeur kan neem? Dat al lyk dinge onbeheerbaar. Dat hy wil en hy sal dit deurneem, jou deur dit neem en jy sal groei in dit en hy maak reg. Of miskien kan jy selfs vandag die ene wees wat daar by die dogtertjie sy begrafnis is en huil en dan kom, dan hoor jy, maar hier is hier die man, Jesus, wat gesond maak en hy sê die dogtertjie het nie gesterf nie en jy lag ook, want hy weet mos nou nie. Wat weet hy dan nou? Sy het moes gesterf, ons kan het sien, ons weet het. Dit is so verklaar. Ook jy, glo net dit wat jy dink jy sien. Dinge kan nie verander nie. Dit is nie eens verby, dit is gedane sake. Here sê, bring dit na my. Jy dink, no ways, daar is niks hieraan te doen nie. Hy kan niks verander hieraan nie. Hier is die Here. Hy is die een wat alles oorwin het, wat alles in sy hande het. Hy maak alles nuut. Miskien is jy een van sy disippels, wat hom lief het en wat hom volg, maar jy verstaan nie al die goed wat hier gebeur rondom jou nie. Hoekom pla die mense die Here met onmoontlike dinge? Doe net wat jy moet doen. Die Here sê ook, ek loop die pad met jou. En ek sal jou by jou wees deur my Gees en jy sal verstaan. En uiteindelik sal jy soos Thomas sê, my Here en my God, wanneer jy my sien vir wie ek is. En dat ek alles nuut maak, ook jou. En dat ek jou wil gebruik, ook in my koninkryk. Hoe kyk jy na die lewe rondom jou? Na jou lewe? Wie dink jy is die Here? Dink jy hierdie saak is nie gepas by die Here nie? Hierdie is te sleg, dis onrein, dis te vergeefs. Dink weer, dat hy het gekom om alles wat stikkend is, onrein, sleg, sondig is, op hom te neem, in te trek op hom aan die kruis. Ja, dit het hy wat ook God is, dat uitroep, my God, waarom het u my verlaat? Iets wat ons nie eens kan indink nie, maar ons weet net, hy het alles ingetrek op hom. Ook jou sonde, jou onreinheid, jou mislukkings, alles. Hy verander jou, en hy verander my, en hy verander alles rondom my. Ook hierdie skepping. Staan op en volg hom. Maranatha, Here, kom tog. Kom gou. Ons volg u. Ons het u lief. Dankie dat jy saam met my hierdie pad deurgeloop het. Deur hierdie baie diep stories wat Matteus vir ons deel wat Jesus gedoen het. Het is wonderlik om in sy woord te wees. Het is wonderlik om die vrede in jou hart te ervaar en sy krag. Mag die Here jou seën daar waar jy is, dat jy die lewe in hom ervaar. Tot volgende keer. Geseend. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.